This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
I'm telling you, no matter where you are on the Texas, on the Gulf Coast, but especially on the Texas coast, we have got you covered. You may recall, you may have come out and said hello to us. You may have even asked us some questions at the seminar last week at the Houston Fishing Show. Well, Captain Scott and I were sort of working the room. One thing that we can do if we're being a little less than humble right now is we know how to work a room. We know so many people in the industry up and down the coast, whether it's equipment or tackle or certainly fishing guys. Scott knows a ton of them. We got you covered. We decided this week's episode. Now, we got some topics for you, too. We're not going to ignore all our great listeners on the Bite Me Facebook group page. We got some topics for you that Captain Scott and I are going to bring up and talk about and kick around. But, you know, we were talking to guys like Wayne Davis on the lower coast, you know, Greg Verm on the upper coast. Wherever you fish, whatever you do, boating included, we really worked the room. We got some great interviews for you this week. You do not want to miss a second of today's Bite Me podcast. And we got your questions. So I feel good that this show is going to be a good one. And it's going to cover everything that you want to know this week, especially if maybe you're on the upper coast more or down south more. We'll get you covered on that. I do want to remind you that this is the Bite Me podcast, and you can find us on that group page at Facebook. If you haven't done that yet, join it. You can also subscribe. If you haven't done that yet, subscribe pretty much wherever you can get a podcast. And you can go from there. We'll talk to all kinds of friends of the show this week. But let's get started, Captain Scott, with a couple of topics. I know the fishing show was a booming success. I know it was great to see and talk with a lot of our Bite Me listeners. And I know we got a lot of stuff covered with topics working up and down the coast. But I got some for you now because this is right in your wheelhouse. I guess this is still somewhat of a post-freeze discussion. Because the question came from one of our Bite Me listeners about back lakes, specifically, you know, coming off of Bayou and Drain, obviously. But the question is, will they be back like before? And if so, when? I think part of that is seasonal, but a lot of that has to do with the freeze. A lot of these back lakes have and you talk with guys all up and down the coast. How has the effect been in some of these back lakes where we all like to go if we can, whether in a kayak or a skinny water boat, and just meander around, just you and God and some fish? And it's always a really cool experience when you get in some of these back lakes. What is the status of those, and when do you expect them to be back the way we knew them?
It's highly variable. I mean, I've heard from upper coast, everything's fine. You know, not really all that different. Mm-hmm. I've heard spotty areas where there's no bait, you know, just not seeing the bait, so the fish aren't in there. Around my area, I mean, if you're used to going back there and hanging out in all the beautiful mangroves, the mangroves are dead.
Yeah.
I mean, they're all wiped. I'm assuming they're going to come back from the roots. I don't know. Maybe they will, maybe they won't. But I mean, I've heard it referred to as a ghost town, you know, in certain areas. It kind of depends on what part of the coast you're on, but I do believe they'll be back. I mean, this isn't the first freeze.
Right.
You know, and back lakes have always been good to me. So, yeah, they'll be back. If I had to guess, I'd say most of them will be back, maybe not completely to normal, but fishable by this fall.
I agree. And on the mid-coast where I am, I would have said Ghost Town. I would have agreed with that. I think that's where you were talking. We were talking to either Caleb or one of Caleb's friends or something like that. And he used that term as recently as 3 weeks ago. I just nosed in there just to look around. Didn't see a dang thing. And then a week before last, I was out on the water and I noticed just a ton. I mean, a ton of bait right on my canal. You've been there. And that's pretty far in from the bay system. Mm-hmm. I got a good 2 mile hike to the intercoastal going toward the Gulf. And it was just loaded with bait. Of course, I threw a few lines here and there. I caught a croaker, and it doesn't matter what I caught. But I'm like, that bait is all the way back. And so the next morning I went out and I went into a couple of back lakes and found some bait and caught one redfish. So it was a grind. It was 3 hours worth. But I feel as if you don't think that fish pattern, they do. You know, and I feel like the ones that are there are starting to nose back a little bit into these back lakes. I'm with you. I don't think it's going to be like one of those days, you know, that we've had out on some of these areas where you're sight casting, you see their backs and, you know, it's a pod here and then a pod there. And then I don't know if we're going to be there, but I feel like it's starting. I really do.
Well, it's springtime. So whatever bait did survive the freeze is reproducing like crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not as many predators.
Right.
In the harder hit areas, not nearly as many predators. So that bait fish is going to flourish. It's going to really bloom out. So I would expect to see a lot of bait.
Yeah.
Starting up late spring.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It was encouraging. And I will say this, I was reading, just me, the fishing addict, and I was reading something online about trout behaviors because I was curious about. And this is not apropos of the topic here, but it is relevant about trout. You know, we're catching a lot of 16 to 20 inch trout. You know, those seem to be of the ones that survive the best is that group. So I'm like, I wonder how many times they're going to spawn in the next year. Yeah, you know, I was reading something, and you probably knew this already, but I had no idea. Trout will spawn 3 or 4 times in just the coming months.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, man, that's encouraging right there. That really is.
That's why I've been preaching so hard on the conservation side.
Mm-hmm.
You leave those trout, because a lot of people say, we'll let them get through the spring spawn, and then we'll start stacking them up.
Yeah. They're still spawning.
They can spawn all year. I mean, think about how many times you've cleaned a trout and it's had eggs in it.
No matter the time of year.
All summer long.
Yeah.
Those smaller trout. See the yellow egg sac in them all the time throughout the year. So those big, big mamas, that's where the whole spring spawn thing got going.
Mm-hmm.
The bigger ones apparently only spring, more of a one time a year once they get, that trophy size trout that we're always looking at.
A billion eggs.
Yeah. And, they put on all that extra weight, and that's when everybody wants to catch them when they're big and full.
Yeah.
I would imagine that even those big fish probably spawn again, but maybe it's just not as much.
Yeah.
It's not as evident.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, I knew they spawned more than once. I mean, we've talked about that on this podcast multiple times, but I was reading this and it was a biologist talking about 3, 4, 5 between now and September.
Yeah. So if we leave the fish alone that survived this freeze and they get that many spawns in, our fishery can bounce back faster,
right? And and certainly, redfish, as you and I have discussed a lot of times, the ones that are getting into those back lakes are younger fish. A lot of people don't realize that.
It's a slower recovery if you wipe out. Thank God redfish didn't get wiped by the freeze. They're getting wiped out on the cleaning table right now.
They are,
because everybody can't catch a trout right now is keeping a redfish.
Yeah.
So they're getting hurt that way. But redfish would recover a lot slower because they mature so much slower.
Mm-hmm.
You know, trout, year-old trout, year-and-a-half-old trout can start breeding. They're going to be spawning quick.
Right.
A redfish doesn't spawn until it's 5 or 6 years old. So it takes a lot longer for that redfish to get to the mature age to get out there and spawn. So you knock out an age class of redfish.
That's a big hit.
It's a big hit.
Yeah.
Because it's a lot slower maturing fish.
Mm-hmm.
They live a lot longer and they get a lot bigger.
Now, I'm glad you brought that up because it reminded me about that article. I didn't even make it a topic. I was just curious and wanted to mention that because those trout, it's going to happen. They're going to come back. But boy, between now and September, which ties in with the the Bite Me Challenge of catch and release until Labor Day. So there's that for you. Now, while we're on the topic of redfish, I thought this one would tie in as well from another listener on the Bite Me group page on Facebook. Reliable redfish signs when you can't see them. Now, we might be able to spend a lot of time here, but we're going to be heading and talking with a lot of people who can also help with this topic from up and down, guides and such from up and down the Texas coast. But you work your polling skiff a lot. You're on the platform a lot. You see redfish. I've been out in some of these back lakes that we were just talking about, and you see signs, the turns on the shoreline that are stacked up on some redfish, or maybe the backs, or maybe you're on your glass, you're on your binoculars looking, and you see signs of redfish. But a lot of people, the majority of time, are blind casting. You don't see redfish, So what are you looking for when you don't see the actual biggest signs of the redfish? What are you looking for? I know terns are going to be some of those on the shoreline. That to me is a sign.
Yeah, the snowy egrets.
Yeah, and the egrets
are always a sign. But generally, when I see the snowies, I can see the fish because they're making such a ruckus. Shrimp on a shoreline jumping, just like they're jumping to get out of the way of something. You'll see it moving down the shoreline, left to right or right to left.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they're not all jumping at once. It's like one shrimp, two shrimp, three shrimp, one shrimp, two shrimp.
Yeah.
And they're going in a line in a slow progression down a shoreline. That's either a redfish or maybe a sheep's head.
Mm-hmm.
But most likely it's going to be a redfish doing that. And a lot of times when you see that, it'll be like early spring, early in the fall when the shrimp are real, real small. That batch of shrimp is still not big enough even for the redfish to even worry about. Mm-hmm. They're like quarter, half inch long, and the redfish aren't eating them, but the shrimp don't know that. So they're jumping out of the way. And it'll look like rain at times going, like a little sprinkling rain, just dimpling the surface. It's not necessarily them jumping completely out of the water. They're just coming up to the top, to get away. I see that. That's a perfect spot to cast. Mullet, as they're swimming down the shoreline, little finger mullet. And you see them group up, and they start getting tighter to the shoreline.
Yep.
And nobody wants to be the one on the outside, and they're kind of moving over each other, putting their buddy, on the outside.
Good luck with that.
Yeah. Well, that's a good sign. That'll also lead you to a big trout from time to time, that they're pushing that bait up against the shoreline before they attack.
Mm-hmm.
The wakes is one of the biggest from the polling platform. A lot of mud puffs. That's something that I watch constantly. And it means that we spooked them. The boat spooked them on the as we were going by, but it tells me there's fish in the area.
Yeah.
And mud puffs are something that takes time to learn to read.
Mm-hmm. You'll know it when you see it.
I can tell the difference between a redfish mud and a sheep's head mud.
Yeah.
And a flounder mud.
Yeah.
They're all different. You see enough of them from in the clear water, then you get an idea when it's a little murkier and you can't see the fish so well, but you see the mud puff, then you can kind of say, okay, I know that was a redfish.
Right.
Redfish will make one big puff and then they'll glide and they go a little ways and then they kick again. They'll make another puff. It could be 10, 15 feet. It can be 30 or 40 feet. It's hard to say. It depends on how scared they are, I guess.
Yeah.
But if they make that second mud puff, they're gone.
Yeah.
You're not going to get a shot at them. If they make the first mud puff and they're still gliding and you happen to pick up on where they are by the wake or just happen to see a movement, you can catch that fish.
Yeah.
But when he makes the second puff, he's really scared. Sheep's head will make a puff that's left, right, left, right, left, right.
That's so funny. You've told me that, and I've been looking for it ever since.
It's like footsteps.
Yeah.
And then flounder, it's a straight line of puffs. They may be 6 inches apart, maybe a foot apart.
Mm-hmm.
Depends on how big the flounder is. Further apart it is, the bigger the flounder. Every time that his tail hits the bottom.
Now, that one I did see. I didn't know.
Boom, 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 boom.
Mm-hmm.
And
flounder.
flounder.
That's right.
And you can stop and fish for him all you want. You ain't catching him.
Yeah.
I mean, once you've spooked a flounder like that, I don't think I've ever caught one that's after, because you know where he went.
Yeah, he ain't there. Mud, not there.
The mud puff stopped. Yeah,
not there.
you got 15 puffs in a row, yeah, and then they stop.
Yeah.
I know exactly where he's laying.
Yeah.
And cast all around it, and you can't get him to eat. Yeah, I guess you could slide over there and gig him if you wanted to.
But, yeah.
You know, it's cheating. But, yeah, and then drum, you know, puppy drum will make a little more of a redfish puff, but mm-hmm, smaller. Mullet on soft bottom can make puffs, but they're real little.
Right.
Yeah. Think about the tail of whatever fish you think it was and match that tail up with the mud puff you're seeing.
There's another thing, open water on the bay. When you see a cloud of mud and dirt kicking, yeah, up, that's a school. That's a school. Now, there you can catch those. You can get, if you know what direction they're going. And a lot of times people talk about the lyre birds, terns.
Yeah.
If they're flying in, and I don't buy lyre birds very often, but if they're flying in a line kind of ahead of that cloud on the open bay system, mm-hmm, that's where the redfish are going.
Yep.
And so that you know, people, when that's the first thing I thought of when I saw this question, reliable redfish signs when you really can't see them. A cloud in an open bay, you know, and the turns aren't always in front of them, but you can, you know, it's a big cloud. It's not a puff.
It usually looks like somebody's been dragging bottom with their motor.
Correct.
Yeah, it's a mud puff. And it's just what it is. It's just a big school of fish that's mud in the bottom. They're nosing along trying to kick shrimp or, yeah, bait fish or whatever out of the mud. And so you gotta play it a little different,
mm-hmm,
depending on how deep the water is. You know, I see this up on the flats all the time where I'll spot a mud trail,
yeah,
and then just kind of trace it with my eyes,
mm-hmm,
and there'll be a tailing school. It can be in 6 inches of water, and, yeah, you can see a mud trail, and it'll lead you to the fish. But I've also done it in 6, 8, 10 feet of water.
That's what I'm thinking. It looks like a cumulus cloud.
It's boiling up.
Yeah.
Well, find the head of it.
Find the front.
Yeah, where it's boiling up the most.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you got to play it different depending on how deep it is.
Mm-hmm.
If it's real deep water, those fish are a lot further ahead of that front end than you think they are. You know, because it takes time for that mud to reach the surface.
Yeah, that's a great point.
So the deeper the water, the further out in front they are. And they're not hardly ever going in a straight line. They're meandering. They go back and forth. So you got a fan cast out in front of the mud that you can see.
Mm-hmm.
I get it all the time when I've got people on the boat and we've seen this. They cast right into that mud boil. The fish are already past that. They're, yeah, already gone.
Yeah.
They're moved on. It's not always redfish.
No.
Quite often it's gaff top, and sometimes it's drum, and there's big fish on the beachfront that do the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Big silverfish.
Big silverfish do that on the beachfront. I wonder what that might be. Yeah, that's the first thing I thought of. I like it. It just excites me to see the signs on the shoreline.
Yeah.
When you're, and I'm talking more now, I'm back in the back lakes, but it happens on the shorelines of the open bays too. And you just see those wakes. And
learn the difference between a mullet wake and a redfish wake.
Yep.
You stand up as high as you can in your boat, and when you see some wakes moving along, and if you can't see the fish, it's shallow water, it's clear enough that you should be able to see it,
mm-hmm,
they're mullet.
Yeah.
And it's zigzaggy. It's more of a V than it is a push. Redfish is more of a rounded U-shaped push,
mm-hmm,
and it's steady, and it goes in one direction generally, and it might arc one way or the other.
Yeah.
But it generally is not zigzag.
Mm-hmm.
They're not going side to side.
Right.
I mean, they've got a purpose. They've got somewhere to be. You know, it's like they're cruising,
mm-hmm,
and you'll just see kind of a hump and a it's like a U,
yeah,
you know, like a submarine. And then a mullet is just this little V, and it may go left, it may go right, it may go backwards.
Yeah.
I mean, they just zigzag all over the place.
It's experience on the water, but you'll get it. But those were the first few things that I thought of when I saw that. One more here, and then let's talk to our friends. You know, as I just mentioned at the top of the show, a lot of guys from up and down the Texas coast. We have got you covered this week. But this is a good springtime question. It happens year-round, but especially in the springtime when we start seeing a lot of bait. Very simple question from one of our listeners about, man, so much bait. There was bait everywhere. I was casting. I tried everything. I chunked everything. Lots of bait, no bites. What would be your advice on that? Who hasn't been there?
Oh, yeah.
How many times have you been to, you turn to your buddy on the boat and like, man, there's bait everywhere. I can't believe we're not catching.
There's such a thing as too much bait.
Mm-hmm.
And it usually happens in the springtime. Yeah, when we have those big blooms of bait, like I talked about earlier, that where the spawn has happened, and now you've got just bazillions of bait.
It was in my canal. I just talked about it.
They haven't been
everywhere.
They haven't been exposed to predators yet, and they haven't gotten eaten up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it hadn't thinned their numbers down. So right after the bait fish spawns, it can get tough.
Mm-hmm.
It can get real hard. When those little shad are about dime size to quarter size, little bitty dudes, it's almost impossible.
But even bigger bait, too, sometimes.
Bigger bait.
And you're chunking everything.
Yeah. And I found that I used to do an East Matagorda Bay a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And if we can get a hold of Jimmy West, he'll probably, you can ask him about that.
Let's ask him.
But it's like a river of mullet, you know, these big bull mullet.
Mm-hmm.
And we would fish around them and catch a lot of trout. But the trout weren't eating those mullet.
Yeah.
They were just cruising with them off to one side or the other. And you could kind of tell where they were by watching the mullet. You know, you'd see the mullet kind of shy off a little bit in one direction. But it would be a miles-long river of mullet that would be, you know, might be 10, 15 fish wide and 10 or 15 fish deep. And they just kind of snake along the shoreline.
Mm-hmm.
But like I said, you could always kind of pick out. The snake would kind of make a sharp curve at some places and cast around those curves, and we would catch our bigger trout.
That's right in the same neighborhood as what I was gonna. The first thing I thought of when I saw this question, long drifts is what I was gonna say because it kind of gets to the point of what you're talking about. You know, you're saying about hang on the edges and do that. If I'm in a lot of bait and I've tried and tried and I'm turning to my buddy, I'm like, we should be catching. I'll just either troll if it's on a shoreline real slowly or just make a long drift through the bait. And somewhere around that bait, there's got to be some fish.
There's going to be some fish. The problem is all they got to do is open their mouth and swim.
Right, so you're trying to drift. My strategy is try to drift as much through them as I can and find somewhere where there's an edge, there's a pocket of no bait, or there's something where the trout or the redfish are actually, you know, stacking up to be predators.
Well, I always talk about matching the hatch. We always talk about trying to match the hatch and be, you know, whatever the bait fish are looking like, you know, try to get somewhat similar in size, shape, whatever. This is a time to go completely the other direction. Go crazy.
Yeah.
You know, you got a bunch of little bitty bait fish around, throw something bigger.
Mm-hmm.
And by bigger, I don't mean it's got to be a 10-inch long, you know, swim bait.
Yeah.
Heck,
just change it up.
A top dog is much bigger than those little shad. So throw something different like that. Throw something that's a wild color.
Yeah.
You know, the clown colors, you know, that things like that. Bubble gum, different things. You have to make your bait stand out at this point.
Yeah.
Whereas normally we're trying to make it look a whole lot like what they're eating.
Mm-hmm.
If there's so much food in the water that they don't care, you know, living's easy. You know, I mean, somebody else is buying all the beer.
Yeah.
You know, so living's easy. We got free beer, got an open bar.
Yeah.
And you want to find something different. You want to stand out a little bit and make. You got to get their attention.
Yeah.
Some kind of way. And whether that's by a noisier plug or, you know, maybe they're doing the popping cork thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I've done that a lot too.
Doing a bright,
I have.
Doing a bright, bright color,
mm-hmm.
you know, or a solid black color. I think you just need to do something different from all that bait that's around. If you're trying to look like that bait, you're just mixing in and blending in.
You know, we've all been there. You know, you're on the shoreline or in the middle of the bay or whatever it is, and there's just bait everywhere, and you're chunking and casting. I tend to just, all right, boys, you know, long drift. Let's find an area. Yeah. Let's find an area. Put something else on, like you're just, yeah, you just mentioned. And let's get through this bait and find where the fish are. That would be my best recommend. I've had some luck with that. It does work. You know, I've tried depths. I've tried, you know, different sizes, et cetera, top waters, popping corks. It's frustrating, especially when it doesn't work. But there are ways to make yourself stand out.
If you're fishing with a group, that's something else, too.
Mm-hmm.
Tie something totally different on everybody's line.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of times I'll have somebody, you know, different people throwing different things, but it'll usually be different color soft plastic,
mm-hmm,
you know, somewhat different in that way. Or I'll have somebody throwing soft and somebody throwing top.
Yeah.
On this, I'm talking about have somebody throw a black and have somebody throw a white.
Yeah. You know, a hard bait or twitch bait, a plastic, a popping cork, mix it up and figure it out.
Yep. Get everybody throwing something different and see who ends up with a fish.
Yeah.
I mean, Caleb, we've talked about it before. Caleb and I fished that damn redfish tournament together. Mm-hmm. We had a drain that was absolutely boiling with redfish and boiling with little baby shad. And these were micro shad.
Pulling your hair out.
These things were smaller than dime size. Mm-hmm. I mean, these were micro shad, billions of them. And they were pouring out of this drain pipe. And it went into a marsh, and they were all hatched out in there, and they're coming out into the main channel.
And redfish are just opening their mouths.
We could see the reds rolling through it. We had tournament-winning redfish rolling through this bait with their mouths open, and we could not catch one.
Yeah.
And then we watched about four other tournament boats pull up to that same spot, and we were like,
good luck.
Good luck, buddy. But we kept going back to it.
Yeah, of course. The fish were there.
We went back to it for 2 days.
Yeah.
You know, just thinking sooner or later, they got to eat something that we throw at them.
Well,
and it got to a point where standing on the front of the boat watching them and waiting for one to swim up and then trying to throw it in its mouth.
Hey, that's legal.
We were laughing about it. It was like, man, I'm just going to wait till he opens his mouth and chunk it really hard in there.
Gotcha. Hey, you know what? Let's get some other opinions on this. I'm excited for the show because of, you know, you and I love to do this and share everything we have with all our listeners and people who subscribe to the podcast. But let's go down south first and talk about some, you know, fishing some potholes, which I've done, but...
If you want to know everything there is to know about fishing potholes, there is nobody better with whom to speak than Ed Zayak, our friend from DOA Lures, who has been doing it a long, long time and has some amazing detail and information and ways to fish potholes that you may not have heard before.
A lot of people bristle when you say conservation, right? You know, a lot of people say, conservation, I want to catch all my fish. But Ed, what you guys have seen, you're a couple of years ahead of Texas and the Louisiana coast in terms of how people are adapting, conditioning themselves to catch and release, methods in which they're doing. What are you seeing down there as a result of all that? Just kind of to share with our listeners.
Well, we're kind of in a unique situation where I am. We have a lot of environmental issues, too, impacting our fisheries. So where 20 years ago, we all kept fish, and it was plentiful. And then we had a couple things. We started to catch on to the, you know, paying attention to bass fishing, catch and release. And we also had some bad years of water hit us where the fish populations dropped. Pretty scary, you know, not to be able to go out and catch your limit and, you know, feeling when you come back and you don't have your limit. And then as that changed and started to recover, we kind of just thought, well, what if we didn't have to worry about that anymore? And it was a big relief because now we weren't worried about bringing back a limit. We just go have a great time. And we found out that, you know, a lot of the people, it was more important to us, it seemed like, than them. And, you know, we eventually found out that they're pretty cool with it. So now we catch them, we turn them back, and everybody's happy. Of course, now it's more important than ever because our population is just man, it's hammered. Yeah. So the numbers of fish are way down. So every fish is super valuable.
Scott and I have talked about this. The mechanics of fishing, boats are getting skinnier. They're getting to places where you couldn't go before. And there's more boats. You've been a guide down there for, I'm guessing, the majority of those 20 years that you talked about. You know, that's got to be a factor, too. So what would you tell our listeners? We get listeners in Florida, obviously, on the Bite Me podcast, but the majority of them are Louisiana and the Texas Gulf Coast. What do you tell them about, you know, this is why conservation is not a bad word?
Well, you know, just like you brought up, the technology has improved to the point where the regs haven't really kept up with that. And this is something that myself and a lot of the other guides at home talk about. By the time, it's like a giant ship you're trying to turn when it comes to our FWC reevaluating and setting new bag limits for these fish. Technology is flying 100 mile an hour. We can catch more fish. We have side scan. We have all the tools we need to really hammer these fish. There's more people out there. In our area specifically, there's guys selling bait. So now you don't even have to know how to throw a cast net or where to go find the bait. You can just go buy your bait. And it's a small area, and you see where the guides are fishing, then they just go in there and, you know, they can scan a dock with their side imaging, yeah, and they know where the fish are. So we said, all right, we got to get out ahead of this thing, just ourselves, yeah, just the top guides in the area, and say, look, let's just, amongst us, set this policy where, you know, we're just going to let these fish go because we got to make a living out here, and it's getting harder and harder. Yeah. And slowly it changed where used to be if you brought a stringer full of fish back and laid them out on the cleaning table, it was cool. Now it has shifted completely 180 where that's kind of a Guggen move now. Yeah. You know, so those guys that do that are like, they only do it a few times before they catch on. Wait a second, this is not what it used to be.
That's where I want to see us head. You and I have talked about it. We've been on a boat together many times. And your attitude about it and the attitude that y'all have down south, that's what I want to see come to the Texas coast. So that's what I hate to say preach, but that's what we talk about a lot on the podcast. And I get a lot of my information from you and a lot of my ideas from you, just, you know, figuring out how to do this.
And I look at it like this too. When I'm busy and I'm hustling and running a bunch of doubles, we don't really have guys cleaning fish for us when we come in. So I can just turn and burn. Yeah. I can bring those folks in. It was great. They're going on about their day, and I'm running my next trip. And honestly, I just don't want to have to clean a bunch of fish anyways. Yeah. You know, and then we have the species that do come in that we go after. We have, you know, our snapper, and we have pompano that come in. So we can always go catch a little something if we want to eat. But our day-to-day money-making fish are way more valuable out there swimming around than they are in a cooler going home with somebody.
Tell us about this candy store that's in front of me here, because this is some good stuff. These bad boys right here are fish catching machines. Explain what this is and what else is going on here.
Sure. You're holding a PT7. That's our weedless topwater bait. And it's a walk the dog style bait. It weighs about 5/8 of an ounce. You can throw it a mile. You can rig it weedless by simply skin hooking that big 7-aught hook in the back of the bait and walk it through anything. So when you have bottomed out tides and you have grass exposed, but you have big potholes that you know the fish are laying in, you can fire that thing. I mean, you can throw it so far, they don't even know you're there. And then slowly walk that thing across that pothole and poof, you know, it's pretty epic. But I tried, when I came out this time, I tried to bring a little bit of everything that we make. So right now on the table, we have, I think, at least one of every item that DOA makes, which is a lot of items. So I don't know what's going to be here by the weekend, but right now, if you want to check out different things like a chug head or a crab or a tiny terrorize, we have a little bit of everything to show. And we got a lot of stuff.
All right, so you said you made a mistake because you started talking about fishing potholes, and that's one of our topics. So what am I doing, Scott? I'm talking to a Florida guide here about potholes, and I'm not asking him about potholes because a lot of our listeners down south do exactly that, and we like to be an instructional podcast, as I'm sure you know. Take us through the 2-minute, the 3-minute, this is what I'm looking for. This is how to fish potholes. That's not something that I do a lot on East Matagorda Bay. Scott's done some of it, but it's not popular. There's not a lot of potholes in Port O'Connor. A lot of people south have them. A lot of our listeners have been asking, like, okay, so how do you know? What are you looking at?
Absolutely. I love pothole fishing. I mean, half my entire guide career, that's how I made my living, fishing potholes. And, you know, I like, just like any aspect of fishing, I like moving water, a food source. So right away, if I'm lucky enough to pull up and see water moving and maybe birds picking and diving above the potholes, I know there's food in there, probably going to be holding some fish. Every pothole is a little bit different. If you glance across them, you see the different color. So this one might look a little tan, where this one might look a little more blue-green. You know, that's the deeper one. And I like those deeper potholes. When it's all bottomed out, those fish can lay in there, and they like to lay off on the edges and ambush bait as it comes out of that grass into the pothole. So there's a technique, too, to how you approach a pothole and how you want to fish it. So I'll really, if I'm waiting, I'll always kick a little dirt up and see, because it'll fool you. You may think the tide is going one direction, but there may be a little sandbar up behind that pothole that's catching that tide and making it move in opposite of what you would think. So I'll kind of really pay attention, kick a little dirt up with my foot, look down, really assess which way it's going. That's how I'm going to approach that thing, because I know those fish are most likely going to orientate themselves facing into the tide, off on the edge of the pothole. So ideally, I'm going to sneak right up, down tide, fire my bait up to one side or the other in the back of the hole first, and just let it sweep through real natural, just like a bait flowing into it. Now, if I'm throwing that PT, I can throw past it and then slowly bring it through the hole, which is ideal. I'd rather not plunk a big, heavy jig head in the middle of that hole.
Yeah.
So a lot of my pothole fishing I did with our DOA shrimp, because it's just real subtle fall. And it sinks nice and slow, and it'll sweep with whatever little bit of current's in there.
Yeah.
So that's my first cast. Bam, one side of the pothole. Let it snap it, let it sweep through with the tide, go to the other side, go down the middle, and just repeat.
Yeah.
You know, so there's, what I just said was a lot of information really quickly, but, you know, being aware of what is happening tidally is super important. And just because the tide's going one direction on the beginning of the outgoing tide in my zone, especially, all of a sudden you're halfway through, everything's cool, and the bite stops, and you're like, wait, I don't understand. But what happened was maybe a sandbar behind you popped up and killed the tide flow, or changed the direction on you. So attention to those little details really help you pick out, number one, which potholes are most likely holding the fish, and then how to approach them. So, yeah, I love pothole fishing. I could talk all day.
We were talking about it on the podcast. You know, we got to get, you know, that's not something that I have a lot of knowledge on. Some of the concepts, though, Scott, seem to be almost like a small slick.
Yeah, I mean, I've fished the potholes down Mansfield, that whole area. That's where I learned to fish potholes. And I've had time to spend on the boat with Ed there, and we've drifted across many a pothole and catch a lot of fish out of them. His explanation is dead on. It's perfect. The difference for them is they have a lot more tide movement than we do. Ours is more wind driven.
Yeah.
And so we pay a lot more attention to which way the wind's blowing so that we'll know which way that water's getting moved across there.
Man, that's good stuff. We got to get you in the studio one of these days. Next time you come down, get down a day early, put him in your truck, kidnap him, bring him down, and we can talk for the whole podcast with you. In the meantime, where can they get them if they're not coming to the fishing show?
Best way to find your DOA lure, right now I know supplying the retailers are tough, but you can always go to doalures.com. Website has great prices, and it's fully stocked. And if you're in this area, check out FTU.
Friend of the podcast. I think they're the sponsor, the name sponsor, so good catch by you. All right, that's it, Zayak, man. Back to the show.
Let's now talk about catch and release while you're waiting. And that is an interesting proposition right now, post-freeze, of course, because wade fishing is something we all enjoy, a lot of us are doing, and you catch that big fish, now what? You want to put it on the stringer and risk losing it, but you want a picture, right? Well, fortunately, our guys at Wade Right, CoastalFishingGear.com, have exactly what we're talking about. One of the best parts of getting to know people
like Tim Stamps and Jason Law, or the fact that you get to be a part of the research and development process of wade fishing. And recently I saw a picture that was really interesting to me, especially in some of our bays where you never know what's going to be roaming around trying to get the fish off of your off of your hip, basically. Tim, what do you got going on?
So we have a gear bag that we've had for several years, and it's a kind of a draw cinch type bag to hold all your gear. It's gusseted at the bottom to hold wide, big wade boots, okay? And everything, it's rubber coated mesh, so you can clean it really easy, hose it down. But we've got a lot of questions over the years, is that a fish bag? And it wasn't, it's just for gear, right? So what we have done is our Gen 2, all that R&D we've been out there doing, the Gen 2 has some tabs where this can be a DIY fish bag as well. So it'll double as a gear bag and a fish bag.
And so what does that mean for wade fishermen?
Well, it gives them the ability to just put their fish away in a secure manner and not have to drag a stringer and whatnot behind them. So, and you can still access fish. It keeps them alive longer, lets them feel free to swim around in there. Everything we've done through our R&D, we've not lost a single fish. I mean, we've probably turned 30 loose, and since the freeze we haven't kept anything, and we've used our bags to try to help with that. So, you know, hopefully it'll be coming soon, still in the last leg of research and development, and we'll be available at coastalfishinggear.com hopefully in by the fourth quarter of this year.
And that's the first thing I thought of, because I'm promoting catch and release at least through Labor Day, and so I'm thinking, what if you catch a monster, you want a picture and you don't have your camera, or you want a better picture, so you take it to your boat, take the picture, keep it alive, and then release it. That's my guys, Tim and Jason, coastalfishinggear.com, as Jason said. And don't forget the Bite Me 20 discount. I've explained it. Go to the website. You'll see what I'm talking about.
Now, here's a question. Have you ever had any issues with the transducer on your boat? I had an interesting discussion with Chet Morimpudi, of course, from the Boatyard and Freedom Boats. And it may surprise you, one of the things that is a must when you are working with your sonar, with your GPS.
He's a Bite Me contributor regularly, and so many people, so many listeners have really taken to your advice and some of your knowledge and expertise, Chet. And I got to tell you, you blew my mind the other day with something that I feel a lot of our listeners may not know. Maybe I'm the only one, but about your transducer. And if your transducer has issues or maybe goes out, it could be because you did something that people with boats do, and that's something that can be kind of dumb if you didn't know better. What should people know about the transducers and in general on that when they're running the boat and when they're not running the boat, more importantly?
I mean, a lot of the people don't understand is transducer is made of a sonar. It's not a radar. So it does not go through the air. So sonars, it needs a water medium. So many, many years ago, we installed a brand new GPS unit for a customer. And it worked great and everything. And after a week, he came back saying that, hey, you know, my GPS went bad. I asked him what happened. He said, hey, you know, the GPS turns on. I can't see my depth. I can't see my down imaging, side scan, chirp, nothing. So we went through, and the transducer was bad. It's burned out. So we filed a warranty, got him another transducer. And then after a week later, same thing happened. So I asked the customer, hey, so what are you doing with your GPS? He said, Chet, you know, I just go to my boat ramp, and while I'm waiting on the other people to launch their boats, I sit on my boat, turn on my GPS, and I check my spots, everything. I said, how long do you do that? Oh, 15, 20 minutes. There you go. Yeah. It's a sonar, so it constantly emits signals out of your transducer. So it gets real, real hot. That's the reason why a lot of the manufacturers tell you to do not turn on your GPS until you're in the water. So you need that water to keep your transducer cool. So that is a lot of people do not know. They try to turn on the GPS while on the trailer, while out of the water. So it's a very good chance that you're going to burn, fry your transducer out.
Don't turn it on until you get in the water. That is some great advice right there. It gets hot.
It's an age-old question in fishing. We've all talked about it. We've all tinkered with it. Colors and action of lures. You guys know how I feel about profile. To me, is more important than the color, but it's not always more important than the color. Kicking around the fishing show and listening to people talk and some of the questions, I thought I'd go to one of the experts, our buddy Mike Acrylic from Knock and Tail Lures. It's MikeCoastOutdoors.com. He had some good insight. You never know who you're going to run into at the fishing show. Mike Acrylic, our friend from Knock and Tail Lures, is blowing and going, man. I got to squeeze in some time because I'm sitting on the side here watching you work, Mike, and how people pick particular colors is really fascinating. And I know you got a lot of research behind that and thought behind that. What are your, you know, I always brag about Knock and Tail. What can you tell our listeners who are like, I kind of want to try that, colors and uses that you see, you think most people use? Like this particular chartreuse, what do you see they use for? That particular color, and I know you have names for them. What are the predominant uses for the particular colors you have on the Knock and Tail lures?
So I've had a lot of customers, they'll come in, they'll say, okay, well, what colors are working the best, or what are you selling? And I'll ask them where they're fishing. So it's always dependent on water color. And one of the stories that I like to tell is I'm really not a big proponent of color matters most of the time, right? I really think color is the last thing that matters, but sometimes it does. And I love pearl with a chartreuse tail. And I would, 2 years ago, I would have said I can catch fish on that color in any color water, anytime, it doesn't matter, and I can outfish any other color. I just had that much confidence in it. And one day I was fishing in the Corpus area, the water was air clear, and I wasn't catching fish, but all the signs were there. I switched over to a straight pumpkin seed, which is not a very popular color, but it's very underrated, and I started catching fish in that exact spot. And I've duplicated that scenario in crystal clear water multiple times. So it's kind of changed my mind a little bit on colors when the water is clear. When it's murky, I don't think it's too big of an issue, although I do like the chartreuse tails when we get into some murkier water or even some clear green, but where it's not crystal clear. I really think those chartreuse tails and things like that add to it.
I'm a huge advocate. Anybody who listens to the podcast knows this. I'm more profile than color. What's interesting about your lures is they're all pretty much the same size. So the profile is the same. What makes yours unique is the knock and tail and the color. I'm guessing you're really relying on the tail. As we all know, that's what makes your lure unique.
Yes, it's the only lure on the market that has a rattle in the tail. And you know what's unique about that is a lot of lures have rattles, but they're in the body. So if you're not twitching it, that's the only time it's going to rattle. So this one will rattle on a steady retrieve. It'll rattle on the fall. So that's what makes it unique, and it's the placement of it. You can't just stick a rattle in any lure. It took me 2 years to get this thing right to where it had the right action on the fall, on the swim, and to where it's going to rattle all the time. So it was really a lot of work into getting it into the right place, but that rattle does attract fish. You know, my son and I were talking about colors the other day, and he's 10, and he was asking me, well, what's your favorite color? He has his favorite color based on the way they look, yeah. Right? And I said, go to Galveston, swim 10 feet down and open your eyes. What do you think you're going to see? He said nothing. I said that's what the fish see most of the time. Yeah. So I don't think color really matters, but that rattle will get their attention.
Well, that was an arsenal of knowledge right there, and I hope you guys enjoyed it because it's very rare we get that many people who, by the way, they all listen to the podcast, so that's cool too. Even guides like to bounce ideas off each other, hear what Scott has to say, and maybe get an idea or two. And of course, now
mostly they're just listening for me to screw up.
Yeah, and that you correct you,
and so they can get on me.
They can correct you and say, yeah, that's not right, you dummy. But no, now we can say and agree with some of their stuff. That was great knowledge all around, all kinds of information. I do want to say one thing before we get out of here. The Bite Me gear is really, really cool. We really, really love it. We talk about gas money. That's a cool thing to do for Scott and myself. Just go to scottnullphotography.com and you can get all the Bite Me gear you want right there. Don't forget to give us your questions. Drop them to either directly to us or on the group page itself, the Bite Me Fishing group page, and we'll get to them in a very, very soon episode. Next week's going to be another special episode. Next week we're going to actually have a live studio audience, so to speak, from Scott and my actually a seminar, whatever you want to call it, from the recent fishing show as well. You guys take care. Catch a lot of fish. Oh, I know you learned something today, if not from Scott and myself, from our great guests. So tight lines. We'll catch you next time.